Don't throw them on the floor, Lynn. It's not that bad. Chapter 11, verses 4 to the end of the chapter. And for those of you that don't know, Numbers is not originally called Numbers. It's only because that's how we've translated it. The actual literal name of it in the Hebrew Old Testament is In the Wilderness, which makes the book sound an awful lot more interesting than Numbers. There you go. So Numbers chapter 11, 4 to the end. The rabble with them began to crave other food. And again, the Israelites started wailing and said, "If only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost. Also the cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, and garlic. But now we've lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna." The manna was like coriander seed and looked like resin. The people went around gathering it and then ground it in a hand mill or crushed it in a mortar. They cooked it in a pot or made it into cakes, and it tasted like something made with olive oil. When the Jews settled on the camp at night, the manna also came down. Moses heard the people of every family wailing, each at the entrance to his tent. The Lord became exceedingly angry, and Moses was troubled. He asked the Lord, "Why have you brought this trouble on your servant? What have I done to displease you, that you put the burden of all these people on me? Did I conceive all these people? Did I give them birth? Why do you tell me to carry them in my arms, as a nurse carries an infant, to the land you promised on oath to their forefathers? Where can I get meat for all these people? They keep wailing to me, 'Give us meat to eat.' I cannot carry all these people by myself. The burden is too heavy for me. If this is how you are going to treat me, put me to death right now. If I found favor in your eyes, and do not let my face, let me face my own ruin." The Lord said to Moses, "Bring me 70 of Israel's elders who are known to you as leaders and officials among the people. Make them come to the tent of meeting, that they may stand there with you. I will come down and speak with you there, and I will take on the spirit that is on you. And I will take of the spirit that is on you and put the spirit on them. They will help you carry the burden of the people so that you will not have to carry it alone. Tell the people, 'Consecrate yourselves in preparation for tomorrow when you will eat meat.' The Lord heard you when you wailed. If only we had meat to eat, we were better off in Egypt. Now the Lord will give you meat and you will eat it. You will not eat it for just one day or 2 days or 5, 10, or 20 days, but for a whole month until it comes out of your nostrils and you loathe it. Because you have rejected the Lord who is among you and have wailed before him, saying, 'Why did we ever leave Egypt?' But Moses said, 'Here I am among 600,000 men on foot, and you say, I will give them meat to eat for a whole month. Would they have enough if flocks and herds were slaughtered for them? Would they have enough if all the fish in the sea were caught for them?' The Lord answered Moses, 'Is the Lord's arm too short? You will now see whether or not what I say will come true for you.' So Moses went out and told the people what the Lord had said. He brought together 70 of their elders and made them stand around the tent. Then the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke with them, and he took of the spirit that was on him and put the spirit on the 70 elders. When the spirit rested on them, they prophesied, but they did not do so again. However, two men whose names were Eldad and Medad had remained in the camp. They were listening among the elders, but did not go out to the tent. Yet the Spirit also rested on them, and they prophesied in the camp. A young man ran and told Moses, 'Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp. Joshua, son of Nun, who had been Moses' assistant since youth, spoke up and said, "Moses, my Lord, stop them." But Moses replied, "Are you jealous for my sake? I wish that all the Lord's people were prophets, and that the Lord would put his spirit on them." Then Moses and the elders of Israel returned to the camp. Now a wind went out from the Lord and drove quail in from the sea. It brought them down all around the camp to about 3 feet above the ground, as far as a day's walk in any direction. All that day and night and all the next day, the people went out and gathered quail. No one gathered less than 10 homers. Then they spread them out all around the camp. But while the meat was still between their teeth and before it could be consumed, the anger of the Lord burned against the people, and he struck them with a severe plague. Therefore the place was named Kibroth Hattaavah, because there they buried the people who had craved other food. From Kibroth Hattaavah, the people travelled to Hazeroth and stayed there. And God bless to us that reading from his word. Isn't that fun? Lots of people moaning, and God's reaction is they'll eat it till then they'll like it. And then they'll eat it till it's coming out of their nostrils and they hate it. Sometimes the Bible can be exciting, can't it? We're going to sing again, Speak, Lord, in the Stillness. Those hymns. Our second reading comes from John chapter 6, verses 1 to 21. No, 24, sorry. 1 to 24, John 6, 1 to 24. Found on page 1069 of the Church Bible. Sometime after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee, that is, the Sea of Tiberias, and a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the miraculous signs he had performed on the sick. Then Jesus went up on a mountainside and sat down with his disciples. The Jewish Passover feast was near. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming towards him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test them, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Philip answered him, 8 months' wages wouldn't buy enough bread for each one to have a bite." Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. Here is a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish. But how far will they go among so many?" Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." There was plenty of grass in that place, and the men sat down, about 5,000 of them. Jesus then took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. He did the same with the fish. When they had all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, "Gather the pieces that are left over. Let nothing be wasted." So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. After the people saw the miraculous sign that Jesus did, they began to say, "Surely this is the prophet who is to come into the world." Jesus, knowing that they intended to come and make him king by force, withdrew again to a mountain by himself. When evening came, his disciples went down to the lake, where they got into a boat and set off across the lake for Capernaum. By now, it was dark, and Jesus had not yet joined them. A strong wind was blowing, and the waters grew rough. When they had rowed 3 or 3.5 miles, they saw Jesus approaching the boat, walking on the water, and they were terrified. But he said to them, "It is I. Do not be afraid." Then they were willing to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat reached the shore where they were heading. The next day, the crowd that had stayed on the opposite shore of the lake realized that only one boat had been there and that Jesus had not entered it with his disciples, but that they had gone away alone. Then some boats from Tiberias landed near the place where the people had eaten the bread after the Lord had given thanks. Once the crowd realized that neither Jesus nor his disciples were there, they got into the boats and went to Capernaum in search of Jesus. And God bless to us that reading from his word. Right, oh gosh, you're a lot clearer now. Feeding of the 5,000, most of us know what it's all about, yeah? Yeah, wrong. This is feeding of the 5,000 in John, and therefore no one knows what John is talking about, because John tends to make things very, very complicated for us. But I'm going to try really hard to explain to you what is going on here and how we might apply it to ourselves. I want us to think about, first of all, though, do you have a hero? Do you have a hero? Joel, who's your hero? Ah, oh, get over you. Obviously, other than me, who is amazing, do you have a hero? Rachel, do you have a hero? It better be me. Mary Seacole, tell me about Mary Seacole. So Mary Seacole is your hero because she got her hands dirty and dealt with the people in Crimea on the front line, not just organised everyone else to deal with the people on the front line. And she funded herself, which was quite interesting. And she now finally has a statue, whereas the countless statues of Florence Nightingale, she now has a statue that did equally, if not more. There you go, so she's your hero. Anyone else got a hero? None of you have a hero. Go on, Pete. Do you want a medal for her? Oh, bless. Well done, Sandra. I can get you an MBE or something. Okay, so when we have heroes, we tend to look up to people, don't we? And we see people as pioneers. And maybe when we're younger, we have more heroes than when we're older. Maybe that's why none of you are talking to me, or you just don't think that I'm asking questions that you can answer. I had heroes when I was younger. Still do in some ways. So Martin Luther King was one of my heroes. I think the way that he, tried to keep on the straight and narrow, but also say this is wrong and I'm going to stand for it, but not incite revolution. That wonderful speech of the "I Have a Dream." You know, it's about not about the colour of your skin, but about the content of your character. I just want us to be able to live together all as one body rather than separating each other out. That really inspired me, which is why I get thoroughly confused with the modern world. But there you go, which seems to have gone completely the opposite way. Douglas Bader, just for his sheer determination, I think the fact that the man walked with no legs, first man to walk without a stick on artificial legs. What's right? Nelson Mandela, yeah, just, oh, ow. I did that once on a metal lectern and sliced my hand open. But thankfully, this is wood. So there you go. I think these people, and they give us inspiration for how to live our lives, don't they? Now, for the Jews, Moses was that person. Moses was their hero. He was the one who was the leader, the great prophet, the great leader, the one that they were going to follow, the one that they followed through the wilderness, the one that they were inspired by. And he was great, apart from all the times he wasn't. Because as we saw in the Numbers passage, Moses spent an awful lot of time going, "Oh, give me a rest. I've had enough of these grumbling, whiny people. All they ever do is moan. Constantly. It's like having kids. All the time, but I've got 600,000 of them. This is how many he's got to deal with. 600,000 people moaning at him all the time. Oh, they're hungry. Are we there yet? It's not fair." When I was younger, I was convinced that we lived on a roundabout, because whenever I'd say, "Well, are we there yet?" Dad would say, "Just round the next corner." It was just meant going round and round, but there you go. But they were, that is the hero. And then latterly it then became David. But for, you know, these big names within Israelite history, Moses, David, Elijah, are the ones that they're looking to the whole time. How did they do these things? So Moses has this problem. He's got these people standing there going, we want meat. And we're fed up with this manna. Do you know, how ungrateful can you be? The manna is falling out of the sky. They haven't got to do anything for it. It just appears in the camp the next morning. And they're moaning. Oh, all I've got is this. It's so unfair. And so God says, okay, I'll deal with it. But the people are saying, oh, we want some meat. Oh, please. Okay. Now, look what God gives them. He doesn't give them anything. He gives them quail, which is a really rare kind of, you know, you go, if you go into a posh restaurant and you order quail, it's going to cost you a lot of money. It's just dumping it out of the sky. That's amazing. The winds blow, all these quail are brought in, and they're just literally dropping out of the sky onto the camp. Now, that sounds like a pretty gracious God, doesn't it? But Moses is faced with this issue. What do I do? Where am I going to get enough meat from? There's hundreds of thousands of them. And he can't solve the problem. So God solves it for him. You notice there's a parallel between that and the passage in John. If you look at the beginning of the passage of John, Jesus is, first of all, we have this idea, you know, you've got to see a Moses motif walking through this. A big crowd follow. Jesus goes up a mountainside. Who else goes up mountainsides? Moses. The answer to this is Moses, it's not Jesus, okay? Most of the questions are going to be Moses. Who else goes up a mountainside? Moses. He's got the problem of people needing to be fed. Moses. Jesus also has the problem of needing to be fed. Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming towards him. He said to Philip, where shall we buy bread for these people to eat? Notice in Numbers, where are we going to get all this meat from? Where shall I get it from? But the clue here is at the end of verse 6. He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. And this is where we begin to see the difference between Jesus and Moses. Moses doesn't know how he's going to solve the problem, and God needs to step in to do it. Jesus is God. Jesus knows how he's going to solve the problem. And he's just wondering if they're just going to believe or whether they are going to grumble. Philip's response, 8 months' wages wouldn't buy enough bread for each one of these people to have something to eat. 8 months' wages is a lot of money. We're not going to have, you know, if we put that into today's, the average wage is what, £35,000 a year now? That's the average wage in the country. So let's say that's just over £2,000 net. So let's say it's £2,000 for 8 months. That's £16,000. That's a lot of money, isn't it? That's like a new car. That's the equivalent of going out and buying a new car. £16,000. And it's not even a very good new car. It's just a new car. But £16,000. That's what it's going to take. But there is no sense of faith in this. The response is, what do I do? £16,000. Where am I going to get that from? At this time of year, on a Wednesday. But Jesus knows what he's going to do. Another of his disciples, Andrew, who might get a little badge for well done, goes and beats up a small boy. No, he doesn't. A little boy says, I've got some food. I've got 5 loaves and 2 fish. But he's so spurning of the offering. But what are we going to do with that? Ever noticed that before? How just casting it off he is. Well, this guy's turned up with, this kid's offered me 5 loaves. It's like Joel walking in going, you can have my 5 loaves and 2 fish. And all of the adults going, that's not going to feed us. And so we have that lovely situation, and Jesus goes, fine, give it to me. Wow. Now imagine you're a disciple at this point. How are you going to feel? You've been following Jesus all over the place. You've seen him do some amazing stuff, but even you know that you can't transform 5 loaves and 2 fish into enough to feed 5,000 people. Even if you had rosemary and a blender, you could not transform 5 loaves and 2 fish into enough to feed 5,000 people. And that's just the men. There are women and children there as well. But he sits them all down, sit them all down, sit them down in groups of 50s. And I want you to go around and I want you to take these baskets after I've given thanks for the food that's been provided. I want you to take these baskets and I want you to go out and make sure that everyone has got enough to eat. And then there's leftovers. And here's again where we diverge from the idea of Moses. This is, Jesus is more than Moses. Because what would happen in the wilderness? What used to happen in the wilderness with the manna? What happened at the end of the day? Now, this is Bible 101 here. What was that? Yeah, well, it did, you couldn't keep it. It went rotten. It went off. You couldn't keep it. There's leftovers with Jesus. He takes what he's been given and he goes, it's fine. And then as we go through the passage, you then go into Jesus walking on water. How did Moses get across the Red Sea? God had to part it. What does Jesus do? He goes for a walk on top of it. This whole idea is that Jesus is more than Moses. And this is what we're supposed to get from the passage. It's not just about, wow, isn't that great that he turned 5 loaves and 2 fish into enough to feed 5,000 people. That's not what it's about. It's about how amazing and how abundant you the abundancy you receive when you go to the source rather than the middleman. This is a statement of who Jesus is. When he meets the people when he's walking on water and he gets to the disciples' boat, he says, "It is I," not because he's Leclerc from Alo Alo, but actually the literal translation, it is I am. Well, it is I am means it's me, God. The name of God in the Old Testament is I am who I am. When Jesus says I am, he is saying he is God. And when people tell you that Jesus never once claims to be God, they don't understand the Bible, and you need to at that point walk away and ask them to go and read a commentary from somewhere. That's what Jesus means. That's why he gets accused of blasphemy by the Sanhedrin, is because he says, I am. He uses the divine name. So when he's walking along the water and they say, who is it? It is I am. Don't be afraid. There is a statement of who God is. If we are with God, it's going to be greater than if we're just hanging out with his prophet. And that's the point that we're trying to, that John is trying to get across, is you've got a problem, go to God. You've got a problem, ask him. Because he's the one who will provide for you and there will be an abundance. He's the one who will give you all that you need and has all of the answers, etc., etc., etc. I find it really interesting that you have the very classic response that so many churches give. It comes out of Philip's mouth. There's this massive problem. Where are we going to get all the, how are we going to solve the problem, Jesus asks. And the first response of Philip is, oh, we can't afford it. Let's scale it down. The first response of the church quite often is, yeah, we can't afford it. We couldn't possibly manage that. Do you know what? You can afford it because you need to go to God. We need to start having that faith. The test is being given to us on a daily basis. Whenever we sit in church meeting and we're wondering about whether we should do something, that's what we need to be wondering about. Can we do it? Not, or what should we do it? Not, can we afford it? Because if we're supposed to do it, then God will sort it out. We're only limited by our vision of God about what we can achieve. Does that mean we'll get everything we want? No. But it means that we have to ask God as to what he wants us to do, and he will provide if it is the right thing. So if someone were to walk into a church meeting and say, I really think we ought to be doing this, then let's discern whether it's the right thing and we'll work it out. Makes life more interesting and more fun, doesn't it? If you live by the seat of your pants, kind of going, well, we don't know if we can afford it, but hey. I was encouraged when I went to Willow Creek back in 2017. We were given a tour of the Willow Creek site, which is so American, it's just, you know, and the reason, what I mean by it being American, is the Americans are, don't have a welfare system, for example, and they don't have an awful lot of the things that we have in this country and we take for granted. So they have like what's essentially a Citizens Advice Bureau. They've got solicitors, they've got doctors, they've got dentists, they've got people who just give their time for free because you've got to pay for it otherwise. They have a food bank. What I love about the food bank is they've set it out like a supermarket and you can go around with a trolley, which I think gives people some pride rather than, rather than just giving them a box and going off you go. They can actually choose what they want. They've got a massive warehouse. They've got a children's clothing place, which again, they hang it all out on hangers and you can choose, and they've got changing rooms and everything rather than going just dumping it. And then there is the wonderful thing about the cars. They have a garage. And this all came about because someone, because in America you just drive everywhere because there's no public transport, basically, and everything's so far apart. So if you haven't got a car, you're stuck. Well, this poor couple, or poor family, had arrived at church and their car broke down in the car park. And it didn't just break down, it went the way of all flesh, basically. It died. And another member in the church said, well, I've got a car that we were going to sell, but we don't need to because I've already got the other car. So you can have it. And they thought, oh, that's lovely. Well, what I'd like to do, though, is make sure that it's all up to scratch for them. So they then took it to a mechanic. Well, out of this, they started at a mechanics. So you can take your car to the Willow Creek in Chicago, and they will mend it. And you only pay for parts. You don't even pay for labor. And if you need a car, they will source you a car from people who donate cars to them. Now, that's vision. That's saying, do you know what? That might, if however, you had started the other way around and you'd sat in a meeting and said, I think what we want to do is we want to start mechanics, there'd be this look on everyone's face of, what? Do you know, it's the cleanest garage I've ever been in. It was beautiful. I didn't realize garages could be that beautiful. They've got like eight or nine ramps that they can get them up and down on and all sorts. And they'll do the cars up before they give them to people who need them. Just wow. But again, as I say, if you'd started the other way around, you'd never do it. why is it we come to every problem with our calculator rather than how big is our God? And then when we do get an offer, how often are we like Andrew saying, yeah, but what are we going to do with that? It's not enough. Thanks, but your 50p, lovely. Not going to do very much though, is it? But how often do we come to our issues like that? How often do we spurn the offering of others? Of it not being quite what we want with our vision in our head, rather than it being what God can do something with. Because here's the interesting thing here, and I'm not talking about money now. I'm talking about people. What's the one thing each one of us can offer? You haven't got to be loaded to be able to give an offering. You can offer yourself to be used in God's kingdom. And you might think that what you've got to offer is little. But do you know what? If you give it to God, He'll do amazing things with it. You might not be the brightest person in the world. It doesn't matter. You might not be the richest. You might not be the wisest. It doesn't matter. If what you've got is going to be given to God, then He'll take you on an amazing journey. This morning we were talking about these different people who didn't think they were good enough. I love the idea of the fact that Moses couldn't like get a sentence out. Apart from when he's grumbling at God. But he can't speak in public. Moses stands there going, yeah, but. Can't do it. Fine, I'll give you Aaron. But I still need you for your qualities. I need you for your leadership. I need you to... I don't know if it's open. Do you want the key? It is open. It's open. It's fine if you can. Sorry. I want you for your qualities and for what you can give to me. So what is it? What gift is it that you've got, that you have, that you can offer to God? Because we're not talking about feeding the 5,000. Been there, seen it, done it. We're not talking about walking on water. Because all those things tell us is that Jesus is the one who can, because He is God. We're not going to our hero, because God is greater than Mary Seacole, He's greater than Douglas Bader, He's greater than Martin Luther King, because they only ever did things in the strength that they've been provided. God is great, Jesus is greater than Moses, because He's the one who is the author of creation. He's the one who can speak and planets come into being. So what is it that you've got that you can offer? There's a song by Alison Krauss that just kind of, it always hits me. I'm not going to play it to you, but it's called Country Boy. And it's all about this lad who's in love with a girl. And this is where I kind of go, this is me. He hasn't got much to offer. He's never going to be able to afford a diamond ring. But I can give you the stars in the sky. And I can give you a loving heart. And actually that's what matters. God doesn't matter how wealthy you are. God doesn't care about how wealthy you are, because He gave it to you in the first place. All God cares about is will you give Him your heart and let Him use you. When Jesus dies on the cross, He does so for us, to take away our sins, to take away all of our wrongdoings. Why would He do that if you weren't worth anything? Just think about that for a second. Why would anyone do that if you weren't worth anything? The fact that Jesus is prepared to die on the cross says you are worth more than diamonds and rubies and gold and everything in Fort Knox. You're worth it. And when he's raised to life, he gives us an inheritance that we can never attain on our own. And it's an inheritance, to quote 1 Peter, that can never perish, spoil, or fade, kept in heaven for us. Eternal life, lived with God. That's got to be the greatest gift anyone could give anyone. And he does that for us. So the question is, what are you prepared to give to him? He who gave everything wants to take what little you have and multiply it.